Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Best Show Ever podcast, the podcast where I interview people about the best concerts they ever saw in their lives. I'm Cam Hurt. I'm your host, and this is just a very cool week that we got going on right now. Goose fans, this is your week. I'm assuming a bunch of people who are listening to this episode right now are massive Goose fans, and boy, you guys are in for a treat, because this week we have got not only just one guest from Goose, we've got two guests from Goose in the same episode, Rick Mataratunda and Peter Anspach from Goose in the house on the pod today. And I'm super, super pumped about it. These guys have had a massive last year in 2023, and they're setting up for an even bigger year in 2024. With some new music out right now, the TED Tapes jams. If you guys have not checked out the TED Tapes 2024, get on that. Fantastic music. And they've also released, at this point, they've released the Chateau Sessions, part one, which is them getting into the Goose catalog a little bit with their new drummer, Cotter. That video is awesome. At the time of the interview, we only have the TED Tapes out. And so we do get to talk about those a little bit. We talk about, you know, how those kind of felt amongst the band as they're getting started. And we talk a little bit about just that transition and how it's felt and what Cotter's like as a guy. It's super cool to get to chat with these guys and talk a little bit about that. We also get into like the internet, making stuff, having stuff received well or poorly on the internet, and how that affects artists and people who make things. I think if you're someone who is looking to start making things, or you want to start kind of putting yourself out there in a public way as an artist, there's some really cool advice from these two dudes in this episode. And so it's cool for a lot of reasons. We go over their best shows. We go over, you know, some of the stuff that they did early on in their careers. But either way, just incredible to have these guys on. I'm a big fan of Goose. I'm not going to lie to you. I got the poster right behind me from their show. I'm not trying to hide it, like these guys. But this is a very cool look into, you know, their live music experience as concert goers. And so a couple shout outs I want to make just early on in this episode here. Some people who are doing some cool stuff. One, an account making some great art that goes into apparel and a bunch of different things. Dead and Good Company. It's a fantastic artist, fantastic apparel designer guy. Dead and Good Company is his Instagram handle. And he made some sweatshirts for Goosemas that were just, I felt like it was one of the coolest pieces of merch there that weekend. And I'm wearing it in this episode. I wear it in, like, I think a couple other episodes. I wear it all the fucking time.
Check out Dead and Good Company. He's got a bunch of great merch, bunch of great stuff coming out all the time. And also another organization I kind of want to shout out. You can also follow these folks on Instagram. It's the Western Sun Foundation. Organization that's working directly hand in hand with Goose to make an impact in the communities that Goose is traveling through. Basically, these guys are a nonprofit who are in the business of collecting and then dispersing donations within the communities that Goose is traveling through. So as you're touring around with Goose, if you make a donation to the Western Sun Foundation, they are doing great things in the communities that they're traveling through in the world of music therapy, music education, the well-being of women and children. It's good. And environmental sustainability, also good. I got to chat with them recently. I'm hoping to kind of help them out with some of the stuff that they've got coming on, going on down the pipeline here. They're going to do a community-led campaign through March and April, where we have the community nominate and vote on the organizations that they're going to donate to. And so if you've got organizations that you're interested in having, you know, funds allocated to through the Western Sun Foundation, definitely, you know, follow them on Instagram, nominate this organization in your town or the one that you know of, and get it on their radar. And then through June and September, they're just going to be, you know, ripping through their tours, helping out along the way. And so look out for the Western Sun Foundation when you're at Goose shows. If you're looking to help out and nominate some organizations for them to assist, do that now and through April. But enough of that, enough of this intro. Let's get to what we're trying to get to here. Conversation that I had with Rick Materatunda and Peter Anspach from Goose the Band. First, here's a little music from Loom called What I Mean.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolates.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles, The Wrath of the Buzzard, PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
But what's been up? What's been up with you boys lately? What's been going on? The new music sounds fantastic.
Yeah, well, we got the pretty uneventful.
Sleeping.
Nothing much going on.
We got the TED Tapes 2024 out now with our new drummer, Cotter Ellis. Yeah, that's been a trip for sure. We're really stoked on it. The music is amazing on TED Tapes. I love it personally. We had a lot of fun putting it together with some of the like first jams and first like recordings, or like we weren't really recording. I mean, we were just jamming. So just like the first sessions with Cotter. And yeah, it was a pretty special time.
Yeah, I got to drive across the country the day that you guys dropped new music. So I was just listening to jams, driving across the country, just taking it all in. And it sounds so great. It sounds so free. And like, of course, like you guys were going to get a talented drummer was going to come up no matter what. I'm sure everyone that you guys auditioned or talked about is a talented drummer, but like, what about Cotter? Or like, what about hanging out with Cotter kind of made it seem like this is going to be the guy we're going to be spending a lot of time with and making stuff with?
Well, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of amazing moments, you know, throughout the process of finding somebody new. And with Cotter, there was like these very, very special moments that I remember, where like we were all in the room and Rick and I were like, you know, just like looking at each other, just absolutely geeking out of our minds at how much fun we were having. And I think that was one of the first moments I knew we had something special here. You know, it was probably like the Leo jam on TED Tapes is like the first thing we played with him. And like literally 4 minutes into that is like when we had one of these moments and I was just like, oh my God, this is something special. So that was really a pinnacle thing for me. And he's just such a nice guy. He works so hard. He's, you know, I couldn't say enough nice things about him. You know, he's been awesome to hang out with and get to know. So we'd actually like, we'd known him for, you know, number of years, just like seen his playing, known his other bands and stuff like that. So we knew about him coming into the search. So it was just, it was really awesome that we never played music together. So it was really awesome that that worked out in the way it did.
I remember the back half of that jam was kind of one of those moments too. We kind of like went through a few different things and, you know, did some of the things that we do and then kind of just like spit out somewhere, and him and Trev just locked into this groove and we just kind of made weird sounds for like another 15 minutes or something like that. We were just looking at each other like, this is kind of tight.
Yeah, that Leo jam is so confident and it builds so confident from the beginning. I mean, it's like starts off nice and ambient and just that had to be such a good feeling to feel already. So, I mean, if that's one of the first times you guys record with him.
Well, that was the first time we played with him. So, I mean, like, yeah.
Wow.
You know, just going off of that. And then, you know, then we played some songs and stuff with him after that. And that was really amazing too. It was just, you know, it was a great experience all around. Great day that was.
You know, aside from like the feeling of energy that we were experiencing and stuff, one of the first things I noticed was Trevor. Trevor just like was playing in a way that I'd never really heard him play before. And he was kind of speaking in a way that I'd never heard before. And it was that I just like, I remember I have like a visualization around it that stuck with me from that first day. And that kind of followed through, kind of stuck with it. It's just like, I don't know. Everyone's just communicating in a really interesting way. Feels just really like open and free, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch that video, he's literally dancing. I don't think I've ever seen Trevor dancing.
Yeah,
on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and that's something that a lot of people commented on. I'm sure for you guys, like releasing the info about this or like making the announcement of this is like, it's super fun. It's got to be a blast to like, you know, here's the guy, here's the video. It's awesome. There's also like the internet is so lame. I mean, how do you guys like sort of like, do you guys have to navigate that or speak on that or anything? Or it's obviously not like guiding decisions or like anything like that, but I mean, you have to kind of like weather that a little bit with how stupid the internet is all the time.
It's been an interesting, like, you know, experience for sure. I mean, taking this time to really take a step back from it. Not that I was like in super deep before, but like I'd pop in every once in a while and be like, what's going on in here? You know, it's hard not to. And like, you put a lot of work into a thing and you're doing a thing, you're spending all your time doing a thing and people are like talking about the thing. So you're kind of like, what are they talking about? You know, but it's really, I think inevitably it's not the best thing for us to do. Like the less we can do that, the better, and just focus on you know, the art of it, I guess, and have our heads buried in that. And you know, it's that place is for people to talk about it and have, you know, express their ideas and feelings about things, and that's what it's for. And
yeah,
you know, it shouldn't inform what we're doing or what anyone else is doing for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, people ask me about that a lot all the time. They'll be like, oh, I would love to make some stuff, but you know, I could never handle the backlash that you know, you get, or like, I could never like deal with the comments. I'm like, oh, well, I mean, definitely don't let that stuff like deter you from making things, you know? I mean, it's like,
yeah, that's a crazy concept.
Yeah.
That's a crazy concept. Yeah. I don't know. It takes a lot of discipline for sure to just not go in there, to not engage.
Right.
I think that's the discipline. You can try to, employ some discipline in terms of like looking at it, but not letting it affect what you're doing. But it's just in there. Once it's in there, you can't, you know, it's just in there. Ideas and, you know, a lot of things kind of bounce off, but then one weird thing will stick with you and mess with you and get in your head. And, you know, historically, like, I think the things that have gotten to me the most are the things that I agree with, you know?
Mm.
When I see something and like someone that's like talks back, I'm like, shit, that's kind of
agree. That's actually, he's kind of right.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's, but no, it's been a good time to, I think, you know, take a pretty conscious step back from all of that and
disconnect.
Focus on, I mean, like we've been, the time we've been spending together and working on things and, the things that we're excited about for the, you know, the incoming future. It's been amazing. So, that's the most grounding thing for me is like spending, when we're like spending time together, being creative, working on things together. It's like, kind of like when we're doing that, it's kind of like, oh yeah, whatever, this is what it's all about. It's all that really matters.
Yeah. All those other things, you know, the vibes are great and all those other things, like just, you know, the chatter and stuff just, you know, distracts you from like how much fun you're supposed to be having. You know, I was just like, you know, first day we'd like dropped a clip. I was just like, whole first half of the day, I was just like, fuck yeah, we just dropped like this amazing piece of music that I'm so proud of, and like, what a great moment. And then like, you know, you get some texts about like people who are reading stuff on the internet, and then it's just like it all comes crashing down. You know, it's just like, well, hold on a second. I love this. Why am I? You know, it's like you just can't let yourself get down. Via that,
oh yeah,
that trap.
It's so easy to like have that one thing be the focus on, and there are things that like you know, comments that people have made that like happened months ago that I'm still thinking about in a weird way. But like, yeah, you got to not engage. I'm so unbelievably bad at not engaging. I'm like 8-9 hours a day on social media. It's like,
it's hard.
Absolutely, the worst thing for you.
I've been thinking about this thing that's like kind of historically sort of unprecedented. This, you know, the nature of all of this, you know, it's super unprecedented. So I try to remind myself of that sometimes. That like,
right,
you know, some dude would put out some music like 100 years ago or whatever, and it just thinking about how different things are now and how long. You know, how long time has gone by and people have been working on music and working on things and, you know, expressing themselves and whatever. And I don't know. Just a thought that I have sometimes.
No, it is super weird. I mean, you don't have too many people that you can go to that have had to deal with these issues. You know, it's not like you can go back 2 decades. It's a fairly recent thing to have to deal with this instant conversation around whatever you put out. But I mean, ultimately, there's the catharsis in putting something out. There's like, we've made this, here it is, this is a presentation of us, get to put that out. And like, that's for me the best part, is when I get to like put something new out and then be like, you know, that could either do really well or do not so well, or it could get trolled on the internet, but either way, it was like, wow, thank God I got to pull that out of myself and we're onto a new thing, you know.
Yeah,
I think like the stuff that Rick Rubin talks about is really, you know, what, you know, I feel like a lot of people, anyone who has something that they want to, they're compelled to make and potentially put out into the world. That's the thing. The way he talks about all of that, I think, is what people really need to hear these days. I guess in terms of, you know, hearing about people that are don't want to make something because they're scared to put it out, and you know, because of what people are going to say on the internet. It's kind of like, that's not good, you know. Like, people, we all need to be making whatever we're compelled to make. That's what we're here, you know. That's what we're here for. So Yeah, Rick Rubin says a lot of cool stuff about the philosophy around all that.
Been massive on that book that he put out. I got that last year, and it's like, yeah,
that's sweet.
Been ripping through that book. And for any of my friends who are listening right now who I've been annoying about the book, let's just get the book. Let's buy the book.
Read the book.
The Creative Act.
Read the book.
Read the book. Well, listen, I would love to talk about this stuff with you guys all day, but this is not what the podcast is about.
What's the podcast about?
The podcast.
What are we talking about?
You guys cool with me? You guys cool with me doing the Redbird thing when I did the Redbird thing? How'd you guess the Chicago?
That was the
guy?
First time I. That was the first thing of yours that I saw. I was like, nice. This guy's funny. The freaking that's, bird, freaking time for a bird to fly.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was great. Like, who's this guy? This is amazing.
It's for like 10 people.
Nice.
Yeah. That video. Well, the podcast is about the
what
podcast.
If we,
is
what
about
if we had said no? Like, sorry, man, not cool.
honestly, we
were really pissed about that.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, not cool.
Yeah, interview's over.
Hey man, that would be great. I would love if you guys were honest with me about that. But it sounds like it was your favorite thing in the world, which is awesome. podcast that we're on right now is about shows that you guys have seen. And so we're gonna go over some shows. You guys have, of course, done incredible shows this past year, been doing great shows for the last 9 years now, but we're gonna be talking about none of those today, just shows that you guys have seen.
I love that.
But to get started, I mean, because people have talked about your shows. Sure. I think Ryan Storm.
That's what we were talking about. People talking about our shows up until this point, actually, kind of. Right?
Yeah, I think he's got that covered. I'm not going to take any of that from him. You guys can talk about your show podcast, but we're going to talk about your shows today. And with that, to start, what are the first concerts you guys ever saw in your life? Peter, we'll start with you.
Sure. We'll start with me. I think the first show I ever saw was a Brian Wilson, like Pet Sounds anniversary tour show.
No shit.
It was one of the first concerts my parents brought me to. It was awesome. I think it was at the Beacon, and I was maybe like 8 or 9, something like maybe 10. Like, I was pretty young, but it was really exciting. I mean, I was just kind of taking it all in. I didn't, you know, fully understand like everything that was going on, but I was just like, wow, this is like really special, you know, just being in a crowd of people like in that way. You know, I'd seen like some shows like Broadway type shows or musicals and stuff like that. But it was different, you know, concert environment, everyone singing along. That was really special and had an impact. And then I think the next show I remember seeing after that, where I didn't go with my parents, was the Gin Blossoms at the Ridgefield Playhouse. They are like, they're like this, like, I don't know, 90s, 2000s rock band. And my friend's dad like took me and the rest of my band at the time. We were called Stuck on the Reef. This predates Great Blue. Nice. Maybe change it to Reef after a while. But whatever, we were in high school.
Hooked on Reef.
Yeah, just John Reef. And I remember we were like all getting ready to go, and my friend's dad picked me up, and we were going to pick up like my buddy Seth and our drummer at the time, Andy Castaldi. And we showed up at my friend Seth's house, and his mom had just busted him and Andy for like smoking pot outside.
We were like,
oh, what's going on, man? Like, are you guys going to be able to come to the show? And like, she let them go and but they got in trouble, but they got to go to the show anyway. And then we're all there at Ritual Playhouse and they just like shredded it. It was amazing. We were all blown away. And then that kind of like fueled us trying to be a better band. I think that was like an informative concert for all of us.
Especially
for Seth and Andy.
Super light bus, still got to go to the show. That would have been unheard of.
Right, that's a good mom right there.
There's just like, you know what? What
pot in the early 2000s?
Yeah,
in the Bush administration.
Oh,
that was not good back then to be caught with pot.
I mean, kind of a golden era to be caught smoking pot. You know,
Oh yeah, I mean it was more of a thing back then. I mean, now you get caught smoking pot. It's just like, hey,
yeah, you know, it's not as
look at you go.
Right. Yeah.
was Pet Sounds like, was that something that you were trying to see with your dad or your family, and
they just took me. Like, they were just like, we're going to see this. I was like, okay, great. Like, I didn't fully understand like the magnitude of Pet Sounds at that time. But I was wow, it was an amazing show. They put out like so much production and really cool instruments of all different kinds. It was sick.
Went back to school and you're telling your friends about Pet Sounds. They're like, we're listening to Ludacris. I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. It was fun.
Rick, what about your first show? First concert you ever saw?
So there's kind of like two different categories, because, you know, there's like when you're a kid, you think your parents bring you places and you remember some of them and you don't remember others. The first like concert I ever remember going to was really young. It was probably like 3 or 4 or something. And it was a Beach Boys concert also, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's damn, wild. Dude.
I know. That's kind of weird. I wasn't tuned in at all. There was like, it was outdoors somewhere, and all I remember was a big hill. There was a bunch of kids, and I was playing with a bunch of kids, and like down there were some, you know, people doing a concert. But technically also Beach Boys' first concert. But first concert that I like really remember, or, you know, was there for and really took in and really impacted me was Dave and Friends at the Hartford Civic Center, or I don't know, some theater, a big theater in Hartford, maybe in a small arena, I don't know, some venue in Hartford. My sister got me tickets. I was probably 12 or something like that, I would guess. And Trey was doing that tour with him, and the band was like sick. And there was just a bunch of really memorable. I didn't really know who Trey was at that point. I was like, my sister was big Dave fan. And then I became big Dave fan from just like hearing that and from a young age, all that. And she got me for my birthday or something. She got me tickets to go to this Dave and Friends concert, and Trey was there. I was like, who's this guy? He's like ripping guitar. And then, you know, there's like this kind of, it was a famous, like three little birds. They played Three Little Birds and walked off stage. And then like the whole crowd kept singing it for like 10 minutes. Until they came back out, and then they went back into it. It was really cool. But that was the first, like, you know, impactful concert I experienced, I think.
Was that, and you got to like go along with the big sister, like she took you with, or was that?
Yeah. She's like 10 years older than me. So it's funny, you know, funny break in time. You know, I was like a little chap while she was in high school doing like high school partying and stuff. And like, you know, in the 90s, it was a pretty cool program they had. That.
Yeah, I mean, I had my older half brother was 10 years older too. And I remember just being like, oh, he's going to see Fish. And that's like a thing I can't go do. Or like when he would leave the house to go do shows, it's like, all right, like I'm one day I'll get to leave the house and do the show and everything. So that's a cool, like, first, you know,
I remember that too. With like the Dave shows, like summer outdoor shed Dave shows, I wasn't allowed to go to for a long time. Cause I don't know if my parents said this or like someone, I just had the idea like, oh, I can't go to that because people have sex on the lawn at the show. So I can't go, you know, that was the word on the street was like, people are smoking pot and having sex on the lawn. So I can't go to those shows yet.
We didn't go to a show, and we didn't go to a Fish show in 2010. I was definitely the leader of the pack that like wanted to go, but my buddies wouldn't go with me because one of our friends got caught the night before selling mushrooms. And they're like, we can't go. Like, he got arrested. I'm like, we're not going to sell mushrooms though. That's not our plan.
We're going to take the mushrooms.
We're going to take them and not sell them.
We're going to eat them.
So then we just like didn't go, because there was like, you know, there's the stories of what you hear are going on at the shows and stuff. And it's like, there was no sex heaven on the lawn. Maybe one guy. One guy, maybe.
I remember, I was like, damn, that's crazy. Guy throws a crazy concert, and that's nice.
Everybody's having sex. Wow.
They're all doing it, and he's singing, and like, I don't know.
The songs are good. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if the songs are that good. Speaking of a wild scene at a show, do you guys ever have like a weird, like a worst concert experience? And this doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to put down any bands at this point. This could have been your fault, you know, but do you have any like worst concert experiences in your life?
Got one. And it was, you know, ironically, it was like, this is the worst concert experience, but also the best concert experience at the same time, same show. Like, you know, it was my first Phish show. We went in, it was like Hartford 09. And me and my buddies, you know, we were dumb, you know, we were like sophomores in high school, not smart, just, you know, taping like an eighth of Bud to our legs and like, or something like that. I had like this massive bowl that I just somehow got in with security. Like, it was just like, it was dumb. Anyway, we got in like right crazy. When doors open at 6:30 or something. Show starts at 8. We like walk right up to the lawn. We had pavilion seats. We were like, you know, we wanted to get high. We're like, let's go on the lawn. Everyone smokes on the lawn. That's like, that's the place to be. And we were just like, I don't know. It was just broad daylight. No one was really there. But we were like, come on, man. It's like a Phish show. We can't get busted. So we just break it all out. We should start chiefing bowls on the lawn.
Chiefing bowls.
Immediately, a huge security guy comes up. He's like, I got to take that. And we're like, what are you talking about, man? Like trying to hide the stuff. He's like, give me that. And he takes all of our stuff. And we're like, ah, you know, it was terrible. We were all like, what do we do now, you know? And then like consequently later, this ends up being like the most informative and most amazing concert of my life for sure. You know, we go back to our seats in the pavilion and like the show happens and like, you know, somewhere during the second set, like somebody passes us like a joint and like that weed was like, you know, real weed. Like we were definitely smoking some swag from high school and somebody passes like a legit joint and we all smoke it. And we're like, oh, whoa, what's going on? And then they play Iculus and like, he's like, read the book. And we're like, damn, I don't read enough. Like, and they do all this kinds of crazy stuff and the yam. And we're like, wow. Like we were all like changed after that point. And it was just the best concert ever. Like we didn't know a lot about Phish going in, like about their music. But then right after that show, it was just like diving in super hard. To get in like all the information, listening to the show when we got home. Yeah, down the rabbit hole. And it was just like it was a bad turn to an amazing kind of experience.
I'm just picturing this like security guard, the day hasn't really started yet. And he's like seated in a chair and he's like, are you fucking kidding me? He's gonna like get up and like walk over
100%.
There.
100%. Like I can't even imagine somebody doing this nowadays.
These
like,
little idiots.
He's just so like, dumb. Hey, what's up, man? You can't chief like, bowls right here.
Yeah, like, at least wait till it gets dark, or like, yeah, I'm gonna smoke it later. Like, I'm taking it all.
This is mine now. This is the easiest bust I've ever done in my life.
A lot to learn, kid.
Also, definitely. You guys being like, no, it's Phish actually.
Yeah.
I was told that we were allowed to chief bowls on the lawn and broad daylight at any time at the concert. Oh,
yeah. I just wanted to smoke a bowl with my friends.
I was told that would be fine.
You had to get your weed taken away to have that experience. It was all part of it.
100%.
This was a tough one. I was kind of like coming up short on worst concert experience. I had like a special chillum. You know, that I really liked, and that got taken going into Jones Beach once.
Damn. But,
you know, I think I still had a great time. So, I don't know. You know, nothing's jumping out is like the worst concert experience.
It's just like a bummer when you're walking in, you're all confident with all your stuff, and then someone's like, what's this? Even if it's just like a water bottle. Like, I had to leave a water bottle at Dick's, and I was like, it's got all my best stickers on it, man.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave this by.
Nobody likes the confiscation, you know?
I had a cool little case for it. It was kind of like, you know, it was like it's like your little golden boy, you know?
Quintessential little guy.
Quintessential chillum. Yeah.
Brutal.
What's your worst concert experience?
Oh man, there's a couple different that could maybe be in different categories of worst show. But I have those like worst shows that turned best shows, like 8-6-21 Fish at Deer Creek is like a show that people really hold up and revere. And the beginning of that show, I was not doing well. I had taken too much too fast. And it felt we were sitting on the lawn just like that. And, you know, there's no one out there. And I'm like, this is great. Blue skies. It's okay. Everything's going to be fine. And then it's just like people started coming into the lawn. It wasn't even that packed. But in my mind, I'm like, we're being taken over. I had to like, you know, go take a little walk, you know. I ended up buying a bunch of food I couldn't eat because I was like, that's what I need right now. You know, like that kind of a thing. It ended up being like the best show, you know, one of the best Fish shows I've ever seen. And I've referenced that show as my best show ever, but like there was an hour there where it was the worst show.
Yeah. Sometimes like the bad and the good exist together.
It had to happen. It was like the tension and release of everything being okay. Mm. And I also one time saw Ringo Starr and it wasn't that good. So there's that. There's just
a bad show.
Weird fucking show.
Decent
he like love. Yelled at someone. He like yelled at someone in the audience. He was like, "I can't read your sign." It was weird. It was like, yeah,
the Stop whole sending letters.
He had like guys from Toto in his band, and they would like try to say something in between songs. He's like, "They're not here for you," and they're like, "All right, man, we just played Africa. People are stoked. Like, let me have a moment here." Yeah. So I don't know. That's up there because I just remember being, you know, being like, "What the hell is going on?" Mm-hmm. But it's hard to pick your best show ever. Seen so many, I'm sure. But what do you have a couple like honorable mentions that you would be remiss if you didn't bring them up on the show?
On the podcast?
On the podcast.
Yeah, you got a bunch. We got a bunch of shows here that were, you know, had a bunch of you know, poignant shows.
Important.
Yeah.
Meaningful shows.
Meaningful shows. Yeah. I don't know if I could narrow it down to one though. That's, I don't know.
It's really hard.
You got one? You got like your golden boy?
I don't have a golden boy. And that's really lame for the guy who has the best show ever podcast. Yeah, I don't think I have one.
It's a little hypocritical.
I can't even pick my favorite of last year. Truly. I don't know.
I feel you. Hmm. I bet Peter has a golden boy.
I mean, it's probably that first Fish show, I would have to say. Okay. Yeah, it's just the most influential probably over my life, I would say. But then there's plenty of honorable mentions. I think going to Bonnaroo in 2016, it was like the first time I'd been to a big festival like that. Couple shows there, like the Wolfpack show. I barely heard about Wolfpack and like stumbled into their tent. And it was like one of the most amazing shows I'd ever seen. We were all like totally blown away. That was a really special set. And then remember like the Tame Impala set also being just absolutely mind blowing. We like waited in line for the pit and we were so close. And then they blasted confetti, like kind of like close to the end of the set. I had no idea it was coming. And it was insane. Insane. Such a great moment with, you know, and it all has to do with like the people you're with. Like I was with a good group of friends at Bonnaroo. It was just like a really, really cool group and we had a lot of fun. So yeah, that's a good honorable mention there. There's probably more. I've seen a lot of shows. One time Rick and I went to Europe to see Fat Freddy's Drop. That was pretty awesome.
We bought tickets to three shows and the second one, like the first one was like sick. And then the second one was like the same exact everything, you know, down to like dance moves and I think some banter and stuff. It was all like to a T, which is, you know, it's normal out there outside of our scene. Like that's there's nothing wrong with that. It's normal. But we were like, all right, shit. and then we had tickets to the third one. We almost didn't go. We were like, should we just sell it and like go do something else, you know? We were like, no, let's get shit faced drunk and go and get right in the front and just like rage it. And we did. It was so much fun. We knew everything that was coming.
It was honestly the best one.
It was just like doing the moves.
He's doing the thing. Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
He's like, all right, these guys have been to every show this weekend. That's awesome.
Yeah. We were like, we caught one of them outside at one point. We're like, yo, can you do can you play Fish in the Sea? And he's like, nah, mate. I'm like, all right.
You're like, yeah, it's cool. Okay. It's okay.
Cool. Yeah. No, it's, you know, they have their program and you know.
They were in like three different countries too. So we were like traveling between countries, you know.
Right.
That's crazy. Right.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Went on Europe tour.
Yeah.
For them. Man.
Sick.
Can't believe they wouldn't play that song for you at the end though. It's like, come on.
I mean, you know. Wasn't part of the program. Sorry.
Part of the set list.
Yeah. 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 Wasn't on the bill.
Oh man.
Yeah. So I guess some honorable mentions. There's a time in my life when I went to saw a lot of jazz in the city, in Boston too, but mostly New York. I like followed a bunch of guitar players primarily. Schofield and Mike Stern, Kurt Rosenwinkel, a lot of those guys. Caught Pat Metheny a couple times, but he was a little bit harder to catch sometimes. But bunch of Schofield shows at like the Blue Note. But Mike Stern at the 55 bar, it caught a bunch of those, and that was such a vibe. The place closed down in COVID, I think, but it was like this tiny, tiny bar in the Village, and that was like this one night in particular. That was some of the most badass music I'd ever seen. And it was, yeah, I just like something about like small, you know, divey bar, tiny, tiny space where people are just, you know, like shredding, and it's super intimate. It's something about that I love. Like our favorite, my favorite kind of place to play still is this little Mexican restaurant. It's in Connecticut. That's a similar thing. It's just like a really interesting, tiny, tiny, tiny space. Like 50 people in there. It's no one's moving. I've had like some of the most magical experiences there.
We should go play there again soon.
Yeah. But it was like kind of a similar type space. And there's one night where I'm blanking on this dude's name right now. Richard is a bass player. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Peter, tell him a story.
Richard.
I'm looking for his name.
The heads are about to just rip you apart for this. The heads of this guy.
Richard.
It's Richard. It's Rich something.
Your Sweetwater guy, Richard.
All right, we're going to have to come back to this, but I'm going to get this by the end of the
thing. Coming back to Richard later.
Yeah, we're coming back to Richard. Because like,
Sweetwater.
Yeah, this guy, oh my God, he's such a legend. But yeah, Mike Stern at the 55 bar this one night was some of the dopest music I've ever seen. They're just shredding. Mike Stern is such a sick guitar player. He's got this thing. There's really not a lot of guitar players that really crush approach notes. It's really a horn thing in like jazz. And he's just his like approach note language on guitar is just like really it's pretty unique to me. He rips that shit. But he kind of like has a great balance between, you know, hitting that stuff and then going into really melodic pentatonic type melody type things. And yeah, he's just one of my favorite guitar players for sure. Him and Schofield. Anyway, 55 bar in the Village. It was a golden era. But yeah, so there's a few Bon Iver shows that were just like super impactful too. Like three, I think. I saw him at the Cap. I saw him at the Forest Hills a few years ago, and he threw this festival in Wisconsin. It's like the first festival he threw, the Eau Claire's festival, their set at that. Those, each of three of those experiences were like, you know, felt spiritual in a way. They're just like, it's just so heavy, you know, they're just pretty masterful at what they do.
Yeah, and he's a pretty special dude. I mean, being from Wisconsin, everyone was very excited for Bon Iver as a concept when it started surfacing. And so, like, wow, you can really walk through the woods to this. This is fantastic. And you know, like, he would pop up and, you know, at Alpine Valley and like play with Dead & Co and stuff. And like having him around in Wisconsin, like, there's not a lot of. There's not a huge music scene. There's almost no one, you know, making music in Wisconsin that creates a scene of note. And he's one of those dudes. It was like when I was living in Chicago and like Chance the Rapper popped up at everything, like Bon Iver, that, you know, they're Justin Vernon. That's Wisconsin's guy. Also, something you were saying about venues with like a smaller venue. It can really bring out a lot in just watching a show when you're in a small place, when you're in a place where you feel like maybe a show shouldn't be happening. Like, you're like, why is this amazing show happening in this tiny little club? And there's like clubs out here in LA that have that sort of feel, like the Troubadour and places like that. But you know, Chicago was like ripe for that, and it felt like there was all these cool little blues bars that you could go, Kingston Mines or any of those places, and see just like a phenomenal band. And then also the crowd leaves like with a special, like, wow, we get to see this little room packed out. This is not how this place is supposed to operate. Or I'm sure that kind of felt that way in some of the places you played in Europe. It was just like, can't believe we're putting on a Goose show in this little room right here, you know.
That's great. I love the small rooms.
Yeah.
It's such a, you know, feels like home in a way, you know.
Yeah, you get like a low ceiling and people are all packed together. That's like what you want in comedy. You don't want to, I don't know how it works playing a football stadium or you know, a place like Hampton Coliseum or something like that. You want like everybody like right next to you for it to work. So I love those kind of experiences. But what about the granddaddy of them all? What about the best? Do you guys have a best show? I mean, Peter, you already said your first and worst and best is kind of all wrapped up into that one fish show. But
I could mention one more just about a small room. One of the best shows I've ever seen was Theo Katzman at Garcia's. And it was just mind-blowing. It was like, that's a show where it felt like Theo was playing to like Madison Square Garden, but it was like Garcia's, you know? And it's like a spot I had been to, but I was just like, the command that was happening on that stage was just absolutely ridiculous. And he's just so talented and his songwriting is so good. It was just a really, really, like, it was an impactful show. I got to meet him afterwards, which is like really awesome. And Joe Dart was part of his band, and I was definitely a big fan of those guys from the from Volpec and stuff. So it was just like a really amazing night. Like, it's, and I think I went just by myself. So I was just kind of there, you know, not really like hanging out with other people. I was just there for the music. And you know, that's yielded some great results in my time also. It's just like when I was in college, I went to see Railroad Earth by myself because like I couldn't get anyone to go with me. I like was going to see concerts like all the time, my freshman year of college, especially in Nashville. So, you know, there was only so many that I could get people to come. And Railroad Earth, I was like, you know, they were maybe lesser known, but I walked in and they were just like playing my favorite song that they had. I think it's called Bird in a House. And it was just like, it's really profound. You know, there's really been some like amazing solo show experiences that I've had. That, you know, just make me want to keep going to shows alone sometimes just connecting with the music and whoever's playing and not being distracted by anything really. But yeah, that Theo show was dope. He's the man.
I love going to a show alone. And I think that like it's speaking back to like making things and being someone who wants to make things. If you are in the middle of a project or you want to start a project, I think that like taking yourself on an artist date and going to see some sort of show, whether, you know, you're a comedian, you just go see really great comedians, you know, or whatever's available to you, or go, you know, if you're, you know, even if that's not in your medium, just go see someone who is great, you know, and that'll just really spark. It sparks a ton in me. And I love seeing stuff by myself. Love having friends with me, of course, but you know,
yeah. An artist sway guy.
Yeah, I did do the artist way through the pandemic. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And that's exactly where I got that little concept from. Good job, Rick.
Yeah.
Rick's got all the books.
I love buying books.
And then reading them too.
Or? And then
like, you know, I usually get a few pages in and then I don't know.
I got it.
But they're there, you know, it's cool. It's cool that they're there. Yeah. No, I books are sick.
Get a couple pages in. I generally got it. Just be better yourself. All that stuff.
I got the gist.
Well, you guys got a huge summer coming up of touring. You're doing some festivals and stuff like that. Do you have anything? Do you have any bands that you're playing alongside on any of those festivals that you're excited to see live, or people that you haven't gotten to rub elbows with that you're stoked to see?
I'm thinking about it. We're only playing like a couple festivals, but right off the bat, you know, Northlands is cool. I love the Dopapod guys, you know, been a big fan of Dopapod for a long time. I don't think we've actually ever played a festival with them or shared a bill with them. So, stoked to see those guys at Northlands. It's awesome.
There's a bunch of homies on that festival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stoked for that one. Be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, not very, very few festivals this year for us. There's like doing a bunch of shows.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good. You don't want to be doing 100 festivals.
Festivals are great. They're all great.
Dude, we did many last year. It was like it was a lot last year.
You really did. I got to catch the Cascade Equinox one, and that was a blast. But it felt like you guys had already done like a bunch of festivals at that point. It was cool to catch a festival set though. I feel, you know, there's a cool way that you guys construct all of your set lists. I love the like covers you guys pick. I love everything that you guys do. You know, throwing in the big fucking jams that you guys have, but there was something about the construction of that Cascade set where I was like, this is great, you know, cause there was a lot of Goose fans there in Oregon, but there was a lot of, you know, Pretty Lights fans there too. And so I was like, this is a cool audience, Goose audience to be a part of, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to Goosemas, which was just, it was Goosemas, man. It was full on Goose crowd. Absolutely. Everyone going nuts the whole time. Yeah. We had a friggin' blast.
I really liked that Borderlands festival we played last year. The one in Buffalo. Cool. It's just a really, really beautiful spot. We played Frisbee all day. And then like we jammed with the Dawes guys for like, you know, a long time. And it was, I just felt that that one had a really, really nice vibe to it. If anyone's cool playing. Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, stoked for a lot of the places we're playing this summer. That, you know, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
Bunch of cool spots. I'm gonna fly out from LA for some of them. I'm gonna find my way to a couple of them.
Oh nice.
Probably Fiddlers in Denver.
You're an LA guy.
I'm an LA guy.
You're not a Chicago guy. You're an LA guy.
Oh yeah, I've been faking it this whole time.
Nice.
I moved here from Chicago 2 years ago. So
nice.
I'm Mr. LA guy. I was at the Wiltern show and the Santa Barbara shows, and those were sick as fuck.
The best comedy I've seen is at the Comedy Store, without a doubt.
Yeah. We try to hit that every time we're in town. It's so much fun.
We had some amazing nights there.
Yeah.
When you guys were in town, I did a show on Wednesday, and then Jeff was like, oh man, you should have let me know you had a show. Like what was the deal? I was like, oh, you know, it's a small theater. And then, you know, I'm like, what'd you guys do last night? He's like, we went to the Comedy Store. I'm like, yeah, man. I mean, absolutely go do that. Like go check out. I mean, did you guys get to see anyone cool?
Well, the first time we went, we saw Kirk Fox. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
I feel like every time we go, there's a lot of great stuff. few weird ones, a lot of great stuff, and there's like someone that just like reigns supreme. And like, yeah, the first time was definitely Kirk Fox. It was just, he kind of like had one bit he was doing the whole time, and it was so good. It was so well executed. It was just incredible. And like the second time we went, it was for sure Theo Von.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Theo Von just rolled in so hot this one night and just obliterated. It was just insane. That was actually like middle his thing. He was doing his thing about little Alan. You know, the little guy from his hometown, how small Alan is. And it was like, he was crushing so hard. And then it hit a point where I almost like got really anxious, because I was like, physiologically felt like I needed to leave the room. You know, I hit that point where I was like, oh shit, like I need to like chill out right now and like not pay attention to what he's saying, because I feel like I'm about to like not be able to breathe anymore or something. I don't know.
Damn.
Survived. But he crushed it.
He is such a killer. He is just like, yeah. I mean, and when you go to the Comedy Store, that's all new stuff. I mean, they're just like going off of like stuff they thought of that day. That is not going to be in the special. So that's like, yeah, the coolest setting to see some of those guys too. Yeah. Wow. So that was a conversation with Rick and Peter from Goose. Clearly huge comedy fans, big comedy nerds. No, I had so much fun talking with those guys. They're just two goofballs, you know? These are guys who are putting out incredible music. They're clearly very serious about their music, and they take it seriously. But these are two guys who don't take themselves too seriously. We're able to joke around and laugh about stuff. And super, super lucky to have gotten to talk to those two dudes on this podcast. A couple things I want to bring up in the outro of this show. So one, are the Beach Boys the key to Goose? Is there some in the secret of Goose? Are the Beach Boys the secret? I don't know if you remember all the way back to when we were talking about first shows, but both Rick and Peter's first show was a Beach Boys show. Creepy. A little creepy. I don't know. Just for me, I got the chills when I heard that for the first time. You couldn't see it on the video, but I've got goosebumps. Goosebumps. Kind of wild. Fat Freddy's Drop. Are you guys watching me just kind of, I have no idea what Fat Freddy's Drop is in this episode. They're bringing it up and they're talking about how they're going on Europe tour with this band. And I'm like, for sure. Yeah, I know about that. I didn't know about that. I had to look them up afterwards, and now I'm listening to a bunch of Fat Freddy's Drop. I feel like my Spotify Wrapped is going to reflect this at the end of the year with the Fat Freddy's Drop. Folks, that is all for the Rick and Peter episode of Best Show Ever. Thank you so much for listening all the way through. If you just need more Rick and Peter, if you can't get enough Rick and Peter conversation, there is bonus material on the Patreon page right now. Become a member on the Patreon page. You can find that in the link of the bio of our Instagram page, on my Instagram page, on my Twitter page. It's available. You can find the link. Become a member for $4. There's just one tier. And you'll get access to bonus clips. We've got a bonus clip of Andrew Sachs from last week, if you liked that conversation. We'll have bonuses of Rick and Peter this week. In the future, we're going to have full episodes behind the paywall back there. So make sure that you're signed up for that. We'll also have potentially some exclusive merch dropping at some point that I'll put just behind the paywall just for you special member people. Get on that. We've got another episode out right now with Brett Duncan, who is a part of the crew for WTED Radio, which is the Goose community radio station. Very similar to like a Jemp Radio or radios of the like. Go check out WTED Radio. They are spinning great Goose shit all the time. Go check out the episode with Brett. Brett is a buddy of mine out here in Southern California. We see a bunch of shows together. He tells some great stories, including one about going to see the last Slayer show like rocking out next to Jason Momoa. So check that out. Check out the bonus clips. And until next week, guys, have a great show.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.